liver, shy little Uber, liver, liver, lead us.
Good evening and welcome to As the Worm Turns. You are tuned in to KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears, here with my favorite gardener, Lance Swaggart. Good evening, Lance.
Good evening, Jill.
Nice that you're here and on this melt-out day kind of going, huh?
People keep on asking me if I like this warm, and I actually know I want it cold.
Yeah, I think we could use
it. But we always have the midwinter thaw.
Yeah.
You know.
Kind of gets you excited and start looking at the seed catalog, right? And that's what we're talking about tonight is
seeds.
More seed saving discussion. Yeah. And 527-486-8166, KVNF now. Those are the numbers to call with your seed questions or stories, because there are stories.
There's lots of stories out there.
Definitely. And we've been talking about seed saving for a couple weeks now, and I don't think we can talk enough about encouraging people to grow seed.
Yeah, we really should encourage it. The more the better. And it, and you can also, sometimes, like I was thinking I had this one onion called Redmond onion, and there's only five people in the United States growing this onion.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, for seed production. And it was actually developed in Greeley, Colorado, for a red storage onion.
And so that was developed how long ago, do you think?
Probably in the 30s.
In the 30s?
Yeah.
And you happened to get a hold of this seed?
I saw it someplace and bought it, and yeah, and it's just gone out of favor.
Gone out of favor, and just people like you that grow it for seed that are keeping that species alive, I guess,
Yeah, keeping it going. And there's... the thing is, it's a red onion, and most people think of red onions as sweet onions. And a storage onion is not a sweet onion.
Oh,
it's
really?
A storage onion. It tastes just like a yellow. It's just, but it's a beautiful color.
Right. I didn't know that difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the storage onions usually are not sweet and stuff. I mean, I eat them in sliced onion sandwiches, but And the other carrot, the other thing I was thinking about that's not grown commercially anymore for seed and sold in is the rumba carrot.
The rumba carrot. Yeah, sounds like a big old carrot.
No, it's actually a Nantes type. And it has only about a 4 to 6 inch top, green tops, but it sizes up really quick. And that's the one I plant. My very first bed is rumba carrots, all rumba carrots.
Oh, really?
And you don't, the trick is not to let them get big. Because if they get big, they get a crack down the side.
And then you grow these for food and for seed still. And no one's growing rumbas anymore.
I know that it's not commercially available.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when you know that if you're not seeing it in the seed catalog, that...
Yeah. You don't see it. And I've had friends looking for it because they've had some for me. And we want some seed. And they can't find it. Yeah. So...
So you've got some seed. And that's the important thing. We had Sarah Pope from the Hotchkiss Seed Library in talking about their plan and program there, where last week they had the event, which I think was really successful, where people came in and they brought seed, sorted seed.
Yeah.
Started.
Everything was labeled. All the packages were labeled.
Yeah, so that's another great thing is you're going to find seed. And I bet there's people out there that have some of this seed that aren't even aware that people aren't growing it anymore.
Yeah, they probably aren't.
Yeah.
You know, and old gardeners get tired. There's somebody I met that was, and I wish I would have gotten the melon seed. It was in Orchard City, Cory area. And he had some that he was growing, and I never got them. You know, darn.
Yeah,
and he'd been growing them from 30,
it.
40 years right there. You know, and he'd brought them. So they had acclimated and were able to grow melons right there, good size cantaloupes.
Yeah, interesting. I think when you grow up maybe in a less rural area, you're just used to seed catalogs and picking out seed. And it's fascinating to start thinking about some of the seed that's been around and acclimating. And that's the other thing. Let's talk about that because that's so important. And that's you see the fruit of that in your garden.
Yeah, yeah. If you keep on growing your own seed generation after generation, they will acclimate to the conditions within your garden. And to this area, you know, to a lesser extent, but it's really to the soil and water and sunlight that you have in your garden.
Right. So they're just going to adapt to those conditions.
Yeah. And one of the funny things is I see sort of happening with all these varieties of carrots that I grow, as even though they're totally different and have different shapes and tastes and stuff, they all are starting to look the same. even though I'm not letting them cross because they're adapting to my soil and conditions. You can't really, sometimes you can't take a red Corchantney and a Danvers half long. They're starting to look more and more the same. You know,
or you could just be in carrot cuckoo land.
The Nantes are even starting to look more like the Danvers.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And the Nantes are supposed to have a blunt end. But, you know, here I am. I know they're Scarlet Nantes, and they're not blunt ends.
Interesting. Yeah. And we're going to be talking about carrots
a little bit later. Yeah.
As biannuals. And I want to talk about how many different types of carrots mm-hmm. you grow.
But I wanted to just do a little bit clearer discussion of fermenting.
Okay.
Fermentation. And I looked up in the books, you know, and there's actually only two plants that really need it the most, and that's tomatoes and cucumbers.
Okay.
And there's a gelatin type seed coat over that, and it inhibits the seed from germinating. So in the natural scheme of things, the tomato or the cucumber rots on the ground, and that's
right.
part of that's the fermentation process. But here we're not doing that. So you take the tomato seeds, and you would scrape them out of the tomato, and you'd put them in containers, and you'd put a little water, not much, because you put too much water, it dilutes it so much that it won't ferment.
Okay.
So you just want at most just the same amount of juice it. Water.
Okay.
No more than that. And you let it, it takes 3 days, and it needs to say really starts to stink. So you might not want to do this in your house or maybe out in the garage or
right.
someplace, and to do it out, not in direct sunlight. And you stir it twice a day. And actually, you know what? This is the same process for cucumbers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cucumbers and tomatoes.
Yeah. You would scrape the seeds out and, a little bit of water if necessary, and you would stir it. And what happens with the stirring is the good seeds go down. The not good seeds and the other stuff floats. So it's actually pretty easy to clean after that. And you're ferment, and it, like I said, it takes 2 to 3 days to do this. And on the third day, you would pour off the bad stuff, mm-hmm. rinse it a couple times, strain it, whatever way you can do it, cheesecloth. I wouldn't do a cheesecloth. I would do a window screen.
Okay.
Or something like that, because you do it on it, more fibrous
bigger.
Things,
mm-hmm.
It will stick. The seed,
right.
you won't get the seed off. And then you would pour these things on plates or trays and no paper.
No paper. And then you're going to let them
dry. And you'd let mm-hmm. them dry completely.
Okay. And no paper because they would stick?
They stick.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is how you ferment tomato and cucumber seeds.
Yeah, yeah, that's
not too bad.
No, it's not too bad. Mm-hmm. It just you got to be aware that you're doing this. And they actually said it was on the paste tomatoes. I'm trying to think if it was Longways or Crossways. It's actually Crossways, and you can push the seeds out because they don't have as many seeds as other tomatoes.
Okay.
So you would slice them so that they'd still be round,
mm-hmm.
and then you'd push the seeds out, and you could still dry them or use them. As food processing and just take out the seeds.
Okay. Now you can do this just with any tomato, right? You don't have to grow a tomato plant specifically for seed. You can just.
Well, you don't know what you're getting if you bought it at the grocery store.
Right. But any tomato in your garden right now.
Yeah.
In the summer, you can.
Yeah.
Pick that and do this fermentation
mm-hmm.
Save those seeds.
And the riper the fruit, the better.
Okay.
Yeah, the seeds are mature then.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is there's not much cross-pollination in tomatoes, even though it looks like it. It's I think it's the potato leaf tomatoes. Current tomatoes, I could be wrong, but current tomatoes will cross-pollinate, but in general they don't travel is the term in seed production.
Right. And it's a little bit different because all of the other plants we've been talking about, you have to decide that plant, you're going to let that go to seed.
Mm-hmm.
Where these, you can grow it for food and then harvest and use it for seed.
Yeah. Yeah. And peppers, where this, leave them on as long as possible.
Okay.
You don't have to ferment them. And peppers, you could probably dry those things, the actual fruit part of it. And use that in soups or something. But eggplant, their prime is when they're shiny, but they're not ripe when they're shiny. So you got to let them almost rot on the plant.
So they're primed to eat when they're shiny,
yeah,
but the seed's not ready.
Not ready. So yeah. You really need to let the eggplants stay on the plant as long as possible. And, you know, even if you just did, say you had 10 or 15 eggplant plants, you only need two or three of those fruits to go that far because there's so much seed in those guys.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So perfect. Let me give the phone numbers, 527-486-8166, KVNF now. What about crossing with those peppers?
He says the peppers can do it. They're a complete flower, so they actually don't need insects, but they can cross. So you need to do one variety. And if you're going to have several varieties, just cage them, alternate the caging.
Cage them so that...
And, yeah, you would make a frame and put window screen on it.
Okay.
And you either can have one cage for each variety, or you can have one cage that you actually pick up and move every day. So it's up to you.
Right, and you're just isolating it.
You're just isolating them.
Okay.
Yeah, because they can get insect pollination that way.
Okay. All right. Good information there. And peppers, love peppers, and we're just leaving that on as long as possible, cleaning
everything,
it out.
Yeah, everything should be left on as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if a freeze is coming, maybe just cover it.
You can cover it if it's not going to be too hard of a frost. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've left things on, and it's pretty amazing.
All right. Well, we've talked about all kinds of easy things to get going with seed mm-hmm. saving, and we did that last week, and how to hand pollinate, and a lot of annuals, how to ferment your tomato and your cucumber mm-hmm. seeds for drying and storage. Should we start talking a little bit about biannuals?
We can. I just had this list of stuff just so people know that these are the things I'm actually growing out for seed next year.
Oh, yeah. Love to hear that.
And then
Let's
we get
that.
Into those.
Super.
So, and some of these are biannuals. Some of these are annuals. I have the Newburgh onion, and that's a good long-term storage onion. And something just if you're looking for onions to grow, we're in the intermediate day length. There's short day length, intermediate day length, and long day length. Mm-hmm. Onions are alliums, onion family,
uh-huh.
are very susceptible to day length.
Okay.
And so we are definitely not short day length. And I've always leaned towards the long day length because they actually store better. But what I've been reading is we're actually in the intermediate day length.
Where we live.
Yeah.
Our area.
Our
okay.
area. So if you're looking for seed... don't get the short day length. Get either intermediate.
intermediate.
And
or
long day length.
Or long day.
Yeah.
Okay, great. That's good to know. So that's with onions.
That's with the onions. Alliums.
Alliums.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, garlic's the same.
All right.
Leeks, you know, they all have their things.
Okay.
Newburgh onion. I have the red core Chardonnay carrot. I have a purple kohlrabi. The winter Bloomsdale spinach, and that's already growing. That was the stuff I planted last fall.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I've already staked off a patch of that. And again, I'll just say that there's male and female plants, and you don't know until they're blooming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can tell the difference because the female plant has little spinach seeds on the stalks.
And
the male is just small little flowers.
And so do you just let that all go? Together,
yeah.
Let them cohabitate.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Amish deer tongue lettuce,
mm-hmm.
and that's a green deer tongue lettuce is really good flavored,
really,
and
delicious.
It's crunchy. Mm-hmm. And I haven't decided yet if I'm doing blue corn or popcorn.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, those sound like some heirloom seeds and some seeds that have a story behind them.
Yeah.
Been around a while.
They've been around for a while.
Mm-hmm. And how do you decide, Lance? I know you've got a seed storage and, you know, a good supply going and you've got the whole plan of rotating and things in your head. What makes you decide on these particular seeds for this year?
Everything's dated.
Okay.
It's as simple as that.
It is a computer in there.
yeah. Everything's dated.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I just look and what's the next one, you know, and stuff. Now, I'm out of blue corn, so I want to grow it.
Okay.
To eat
right.
also.
Right.
And popcorn, I still have about 6 or 7 gallons.
Oh, wow.
On the cob. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see if I...
Which way you go with the
corn. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a lot of good stuff to be talking about through the year and report in on how that's going.
I don't think I'm doing cucumbers. I will do probably some type of melon for seed. I haven't decided which one I want to grow yet.
Sounds great. All right. 527-4868-1866-KVNF now. You've got this great resource here. You've brought this in before.
Yeah.
And that's Seed to Seed.
Seed to Seed is a book by Suzanne Ashworth. And it's really good for the backyard gardener. It's much more. She's doing all her seed saving out of her yard in Sacramento.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So
and it's a lot
nothing
of hand
fancy pump. There.
Yeah.
It's just backyard garden.
Backyard garden there. And I'm sure she's... She's definitely done lots of research, but this is out of a backyard garden. So that one's more appropriate for our gardening thing. Mm-hmm. And then I have another one, The Organic Seed Grower, but by John DeVazio. It's much more for the commercial grower.
Okay.
But what's good about this is it gives a history of the plant, where it comes from, how to grow it, and also the isolation distances. Some stuff needs to be isolated
to prevent cross-pollination.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's with the insect.
It's mainly insect, but it's also wind.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Yeah, because lots of things are wind pollinated.
Yeah, and so that's a pretty big distance, isn't it? It's
some's 500 feet. Some they say lettuce is 25 feet, and some is a quarter mile or mile or 3 miles.
Oh goodness!
Yeah, and the commercial melon growers and squash growers for seed, what they do is they don't do any isolation. Maybe a little bit, but they actually just take the fruit that's in the middle of the patch. Because by the time the bees get to the middle of that acre, 2 acre, or 5 acre field, they're covered in pollen just from that squash just that melon.
Right.
And so they only take it from the middle. And I don't know how they figure that out, but anyways.
Yeah, so the edges of the
edges
field
are
or...
probably cross-pollinated with other stuff.
Right.
And so they just take the middle.
Interesting. Wow, that can present a lot of issues.
Yeah. And so sometimes you get a seed packet and it will say this melon or that squash or that cucumber, and that's not what you got.
Right.
Well, it's a little bit of a mistake.
Yeah. You and got it does a little happen. Bit of a cross.
Yeah. And it does happen.
Kind of a mutt.
Okay.
That's good information. Kind of, those two books really complement each other.
Yeah. They very complement. And I actually have the first edition of Seed to Seed. There's a new edition with updated material. And I should get that.
Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm. Seed saving is all the rage.
Yeah.
Huh?
And the Organic Seed Grower by John DeVazio is only offered through Chelsea Green Publishers.
Okay.
Chelsea Green Publishers. And it's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And his name is?
John DeVazio.
John DeVazio. Yeah. All right. Okay, 527-4868-1866-KVNF now. We know you're out there dreaming of your garden and dreaming of seeds, looking through the glossy catalogs, and you can be thinking about what you could maybe get from your neighbor down at the library, because you can check out all of those seeds that the Delta County Library has cataloged.
Yeah.
And you can start your own seed factory.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, if you have a small garden and you have other friends that have small gardens, each one of you can agree to grow one variety of something.
Yeah, there you go.
And then you have, you know, maybe five, you might have, you know, 5 to 15 new seeds just from the neighborhood.
Yeah, right.
You know, and so you can do this.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. I mean, it's just an ancient tradition, and that's community building, and it's a great thing. Okay, so we've talked about fermenting. Let's talk a little bit about some of these biennials, because there's some real interesting ones in this group. What do you want to start with there, Lance?
Well, we'll just start with the carrots.
Okay, yeah, yes.
That's easy. Carrots and the biennial, and what that means is 1 year it's all vegetable growth, and the next year it goes to seed.
Okay.
So that's so 1 year it's all vegetable growth, root growth, whatever it does, and the next year is reproduction.
Okay, so you're going to plant a bed of carrots.
Yeah, and then what I do in the fall is, well, at some point I look at the dates on the seeds and the jars there, and which one's next, and okay. I set and I will harvest 60 carrots. You know, so I got that many, so it's not a problem to get 60 carrots.
Right, this is just your mathematical way it works out.
And I will take the best shaped ones and color of that particular variety. And there is now a way, I wasn't doing this in the beginning, but in this John DeVazio book, The Organic Seed Grower, it shows how you trim the carrots and also beets. And it's also somewhat in a pyramid shape, that where all the leaves come out. You trim that off.
Okay.
And this is how you store it, because if you don't trim it like this, that whole thing will rot, and then you don't get any growth. It's just going to rot in the ground. It will rot in storage.
Right. So you're just giving it the right shape.
The shape. Uh-huh. And it's actually a pyramid-type shape, you know. And so you have to do that. But I don't scrub the carrots. I don't, just the regular storage, except for that trimming.
Okay. And then what do you do?
And then, well, they're next in storage. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I go to sometime in March, early April, I will get them out of the storage and clean them up. And there's going to be a few that are rotted.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, they're in pretty good shape.
Okay.
And I will plant them out. And if a real cold frost is going to come, I'll put a blanket over it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just they're just starting to grow, and yeah, I'll do that. I'll put a little bit of a blanket over them and do that. And I water them once and, you know, keep them moist.
Mm-hmm.
And they will start to grow, and they'll put up all these seeds, and carrots are insect pollinated.
Okay.
And the one biggest problem is there's Queen Anne's lace around the area in irrigated fields and on the drainage ditches. Queen Anne's lace is a wild carrot.
Oh.
And so if insects got that and they carried into yours, you're going to end up with white, really not very good looking carrots, and they won't be tasteful, you know.
Yeah, that is a problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you have to watch that, you know, and I've seen areas where I would not be able to grow carrots for seed anyways, unless I caged them.
Okay. Hey, we have a caller on the line. It is Tim from California. Hi, Tim.
You're calling up.
Hi.
Huh? What are you up to?
Hi, everyone.
Yeah. Hello, Tim.
This is Horseman.
I wish
I had a question for you, but I'm almost as good as Lance, so I don't really have to do that. However, I always learn a little something every time I listen to you guys' show.
All right, thanks.
And don't anyone forget that Groundhog's Day is Lance's birthday. So happy birthday tonight.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Tim.
Yeah.
Appreciate you reminding everybody.
Okay. Continue on. Right. I don't want to interrupt any longer.
Okay. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's glad he's listening out there. Uh-huh. Yeah. The Horseman and the Missing Link. Childhood friends.
Yes.
That's awesome. And happy birthday, Lance.
Oh, thanks.
You're looking good. Living right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's this clean living. It's this growing your own food.
Yeah, and eating the dirt.
Eating the dirt. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of good stuff in that dirt. All right, Horseman got us all off track. 527-486-1866, KVNF now. Oh, we were talking about the carrots and the Queen Anne's lace.
Queen Anne's lace.
How that can cross.
And that will cross. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be careful with that one.
Mm-hmm. What do you do to
I'm so isolated, I don't do anything.
Okay, good.
And I've looked around. There's nothing too close.
Okay, and your carrots supply is doing well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so there's some other things in the biannuals that cross with each other.
Oh,
too.
Well, the beets and chard.
Beets and chard will cross.
The same. Mm-hmm. They're the same plant, technically.
Yeah. So.
And, you know, again, it's you have to trim the beet, just like I mentioned, the carrot. And there's golden beets, there's Gioia beets, there's different types of red beets. All those beets will cross with one another, and they'll cross with Swiss chard.
Okay, so decide what you want.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
And again, you're choosing the right color, shape, size. And actually, some people said you don't want the, even on carrots, you don't want the really big ones, the more medium size, because you actually can plant more in the same space.
Okay, there you, you know, go. Get you a know, better
Get a better yield.
Yield and a nice carrot, anyway. Mm-hmm. Not,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And beets and Swiss chard, they're wind pollinated, and they can travel a long ways.
Yeah.
The pollen can travel a long ways, and it smells really good in the heat of the day.
Does it?
Yeah. You wouldn't know that. And the bugs, not the bees, but a small type of bug, insect, really likes to get the pollen from them.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and warms it up and smelling good. Hey, we have Terry in Crawford on the line with a question. Hi, Terry.
Howdy.
Hi.
I wanted to ask about, I missed last week's program. Do you have it archived at the library?
It is on the KVNF website. And Jeff just put it up there at kvnf.org.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening, Terry.
You bet. Bye.
Okay. So that chard and the beets can cross,
mm-hmm.
and you have to watch out for wind and insects.
Yeah, and you know how many people are growing chard or Swiss or beets for seed?
Not too many. No.
You know, and even if, like, I used to have two gardens, and they were north and south from each other,
uh-huh.
and the wind blew east-west, so you could actually grow beets in this garden and Swiss chard another one because the wind blew the other way. So it's, you know, it's, you can do those kind of things.
Sure.
You know, corn's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a prevailing wind, go the opposite of that and you'll be just fine.
Yeah. Nice. Just being aware of, mm-hmm. of where mm-hmm. you are, how your environs work there. Okay. What about the cabbage family? Well, we might save that for next week because has some really interesting stuff in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do that. Onions, parsley.
We can do onions real quick.
Let's talk about that.
Again, I've already set aside over 50 onions. And one thing that their seed stock is very brittle. They have this big flower stem and a big round thing. And if the wind blows it, it will fall over pretty easy.
Okay.
So I actually, somebody gave me a lot of those funky old worn out tomato cages.
Mm-hmm.
And when I put the onions down, I put those cages over them. And then I actually put stakes on the corners mm-hmm. and put string on all those cages. And I actually direct the flower seeds to go through those cages and stuff. And still, some still get bent over, but it's not that much, you know. So it's just a way.
Right. Something to lean on.
Mm-hmm.
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 And just to remember that they're fragile.
They're fragile. And don't... one of the other things that I've seen mistake with seed growing, especially biennials, is because the plant just grows. But it's growing just because it has stuff in its root storage. But if you don't water, you're not going to have any seed production.
So you do have to keep watering.
So you do have to water mm-hmm. and until you're actually ready to let them dry out. You know, I would not let them dry out. I'd keep them moist, especially in the younger parts, you know, and when they're blooming, because that's when they're forming seed.
Right. So it's a lot different than the annuals.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And insects really, I haven't had any problem with cross-pollination on onions. And insects are the main pollinator. And it's really fun when you're growing these different things out because the different insects that come that you normally don't see.
Oh, right. That are specific to
and,
the plant.
The plants. And, you know, normally we think of just bees, but they're not always the best pollinator for some of these because the size of the flower is so small or so large that it actually works better with the really small insects. Lots of flies, very colorful
mm-hmm.
stuff, golds, greens, blues. There's a pretty butterfly that's a bluish type butterfly that works in some of this stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't gone out there. I know that there's a moth in the spring that does most of the pollinating at night for the peaches, the stone fruit.
Oh, really?
My place. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know about the commercial orchards down there, but I'm up at 6,000 and I'm pretty isolated.
Right.
So
And you've noticed this specific moth on your...
Yeah, and it's, mm-hmm. if you're out there and it's almost dark and you start looking around and they're flying around. They really like the almonds, the peaches, the apricots, and the plums.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
That's great. I love that story. Thanks for sharing that. Well, I love that about you and your garden. I mean, that's really what it's all about, is you observe everything that's going on. You're aware of what's happening.
I hope those ermines are back.
A little bit of fun there.
Yeah, I hope they're around.
Good deal. Hey, we're going to talk seed saving again next week.
Next week.
Yeah. We'll be back next week, and we thank you for listening. And it's One Woman's Perspective coming up on KVNF. Thanks for listening to As the Worm Turns. Lance, happy birthday. See you next week.
I'll be here.
All right.
Thanks.
Good night.
Good night.
You can make both slow and faster. I don't know who you took a shine to, or who you're about to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so. Low, little low and low.